Tuesday night. It is 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you are listening to The Ooze with your hosts, Jason Sorrell and Rotten Biohazard. Rotten, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Really tired, as I was explaining to you before the show. Sleep patterns are all sorts of screwy with school. It's just a clusterfuck.
So what's going on with school? Because it's funny, you're the second college student I've talked to here that's said they're having some issues with their classes.
Well, it's not so much the issues. It's more or less the fact that I have a certain issue called procrastination. I basically leave shit till the last minute, but I end up worrying about it until I finally do get it done. So I end up losing sleep over the whole worrying, and I end up losing sleep because I'm basically trying to slam through a project that should take me a week, and I'm doing it in a day.
I hear you, man. I mean, and I think when I was in school, it wasn't too bad because everything that I was being assigned was shit I wanted to do. But yeah, it's hard to get motivated to dig into it and go, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get into this assignment, knock it out and everything else, especially when there's so much other shit to do. And of course, like you're saying, then you sweat about it. Oh shit. Instead of, you know, doing the assignment, I watched internet porn all day.
That's happened. I'm not going to deny it.
Right. No, I've sat here in front of my computer, you know, between tattoos. You know, it's not just internet porn. It's pretty much fucking everything. Like the social media shit. Like, I know you don't have a Facebook account and everything, right?
Yeah, man.
I just started up. I didn't just start up my Twitter account. I didn't just fire the fucking thing up. I've had it for a little while, but I haven't seen the point in using the thing. Okay. Little, you know, bits, 140, you know, character tweets or whatever the hell they call them, little messages, little snippets of information. And, I mean, that's how self-indulgent we are now. It's like, oh, people are going to give a shit about what I'm having for lunch or whatever. But every once in a while I have a random thought that I think is funny or there's something stupid going on. I'll see something that pisses me off. So I go ahead and tweet now. And I have the damn account, and I think the intent with all this shit, everything I do, Facebook, all of it, the biggest intention for me is, you know, advertising, trying to get the word out there. Hey, you know, by the way, I do tattoos. By the way, I do artwork. Check it. But I've been coming up with some, you know, some funny shit and everything else, and you know, talking. You know, I don't know. So I'm just, you know, I'm on Twitter and everything, trying to do that thing. And they, you know, the time I should be spending doing research for, you know, this show, The Ooze. Well, I spend doing looking up, you know, what tattoo shops are hiring and who's, you know, who's looking for artists or whatever, and then the time I should be working on those kinds of projects to work on that, well, I find some other fucking thing to work on and everything else. So there's always, it seems like I'm always working on a project that I'm not supposed to be working on, or I've got something else going on, or, you know, or I'm looking at porn, playing video games, whatever.
Sounds about a par for the course, doesn't it?
Right. We're becoming a society where we all have adult attention deficit disorder. We've gotten so much information thrown at us so quickly in such a short period of time. For years, that's been our environment. We swim in a sea of information where now it's very difficult to focus on any one thing and, you know, really give it our best effort and all of our attention and everything. So, yeah, man, I hear you. I feel what you're saying.
In fact, that kind of brings up two topics I wanted to discuss, probably one next week and one of them the following week, actually.
Okay, what is that? Because, you know, we need to work that out.
Not next
what are you
week,
about?
The following week, I wanted to do globalism, nationalism, and national pride.
Okay. Globalism, nationalism. Okay.
Then next week, I wanted to go ahead and, you know, this whole fucking stupid green movement. Everything's supposed to be green and healthy and all that basically hippy-dippy bullshit.
Right.
I wanted to rip on that and recycling.
I'm all for that, man.
See, man, I've not yet pissed these people off, and I feel compelled to piss them off.
Well, I think there should be some reality injected into the conversation, especially when you're talking about the environment and recycling and all the other bullshit. I think it's hilarious that these people have these 3, 4, 5 different fucking bins that they're paying money they have these trucks show up to haul off these bins, these different types of bins and shit like that. So you're paying for the service. You have to pay an extra, you know, extra trucks to come out here to sort the shit, to collect the shit and everything else. So there's more gas money being spent, more resources being used to collect the garbage. And then what you spent your time meticulously cleaning and sorting ends up in the landfill on one fucking pile anyways. So, yeah. Yeah, that'd be...
Yeah,
the
by far,
go ahead, dude.
Basically, man, by far, it is far cheaper just make it brand new. Or you know, in a perhaps a chance you actually want to recycle, do it on a local level. Do it to where, let's say you had, you know, fucking cans, you had bottles, fucking beer bottles. You basically reuse them in your own community.
Right, or, you know, or reuse them in your own home. You know,
yeah,
that's
true,
that's
exactly,
the
yeah.
big thing for recycling, is that if you, you get something, you reuse it yourself if you absolutely can. A lot of shit, I don't know how you can, but the demand for recycled whatever, the amount of recycled materials we have, recyclable materials we have just sitting someplace, has well outstripped the demand for it. You would think as much soda, let's say, that this country drinks, as much beer as this country drinks, that there'd be this screaming demand for aluminum. There's not. You know, and like you said, the cost to clean, process, refabricate this aluminum material, it exceeds the cost to just make the shit new. So yeah, man, we'll talk about that. We'll get into that in a couple of weeks. That sounds like a good topic. So yeah, man, I'll go ahead and get all that set up tonight after the show. The other thing I needed to do, you mentioned this, I remember talking about this. I need to talk to my daughter about, because she's trying to listen to the show. So I wanted to arrange for a show where she actually got to listen in. We were going to do it like an hour or two earlier and get her to be able to listen while she's on her computer or whatever. And I was talking to her today, and she's called me from her mother's phone. I started to tell you the story opening. She's called me from her mother's phone, and we're having this conversation. And so she was hoping I wouldn't notice she called me from her mother's phone. So I'm like, why didn't you call me from your phone, the Android that I bought you this summer, the super, you know, crazy-ass expensive, way better than my phone.
Beautiful Android with Honeycomb 3.0. Yeah, dude, I know what you're talking about. They're beautiful fucking phones.
Oh, she's got, it was a wonderful phone. I say was, because she goes, well, I don't know where it's at. Now, I think I've lost it. That's what she said. I think I've lost it. Now, here's my thinking. You know, you think you've lost it means that there's still some hope that it's someplace you just haven't looked yet. That the phone itself, you know, that you haven't looked maybe the last place you put the damn thing. Or you know what? When you think you lose something, when I say I think I've lost something, well, I leave it here in my apartment and I go someplace else and I'm not sure if I still have it anymore or not, you know? And so that's what I mean by I think I've lost something. No, she hasn't been able to find it. She has tore her place up and down, upside down. She's gone to her school. She's pretty sure she dropped it. I'll tell you what, man. You're in junior high. You find a fucking Android laying there on the floor someplace. Do you take that shit to the fucking principal's office? Hell no.
No. That thing goes home with me in my pocket.
Right. Yeah. I can resell the damn thing. I can have the thing remodeled. Whatever I need to do with it, I can make that thing is going to be my own. And, you know, the likelihood that it's getting reported where now me, I once worked in the cell phone industry. So I'm giving her an opportunity to try to find the fucking thing, and then I'll make sure that, you know, my provider is aware that that phone is missing. So should that, you know, that particular identification number show up again, you know, I don't know what they do. They don't have cell phone police or anything like that, but – at least it'll make things a little bit more difficult for the bastards that did pick it up. It's just because that's kind of prick I am. Part of me is thinking, you know, well, fuck it, good on you. You found something for free, you know, lucky you. Maybe it makes you feel like there's a little bit of hope in the world and everything else.
It's the thing that comes back to the fact that it was your daughter's phone, which makes you more of a prick. You know, that's generally how parents are. It's all good to find out with someone else's kid who lost something, and they have to deal with that life lesson. But it's your kid, there's no such thing as a life lesson. It's like, oh, shit, what am I going to do?
Well, I think it's that way with guys in general, you know. I was all about taking some girl's virginity, not giving a shit about, you know, this being somebody's daughter or whatever when I was young, a young man. And, you know, now I got a 17-year-old that's, you know, I'm not going to name names, but some of the younger men in my acquaintances and my circles have started to notice her and started to pay her a little bit of undue attention. So I'm like, hey, what's going on there? So, but that's all cool, I guess. And Vanessa has a really good head on her shoulders and everything, so I'm not worried about her. She enjoys the attention and she deserves it. So, but today, every once in a while I'm on the internet. What I'm doing is I kind of surf around. I check Craigslist and everything else. And I'm looking for tattoo studios that are hiring tattoo artists, because while there's some advantages to tattooing, you know, out of my own place and, you know, pretty much being my own boss and setting my own hours, the problem is just as we discussed, nothing else gets done. I'll be sitting around here between tattoos, and either I'll be so slammed with tattoos that I don't have time to do shit else, or I will squander my time. You know, I'll be watching, you know, porn or Star Trek or playing games or whatever, you know, sleeping. I like to nap and shit like that. So,
old man. Oh.
So, yeah, So that's the kind of thing I deal with. At the shop, if I'm at a shop again, I don't have that opportunity. Pretty much that the hours between tattoos, well, then I have to spend that time focusing on, you know, something else. I have to fill my time with some other thing. We got a caller real quick. Let me go ahead and bring them on just to see, you know, what the hell is going on here, because I wasn't expecting a caller. All right. Okay. No. Okay, we're good. 213 area code. You're on the use. It's on your brain.
213.
Going once. Going twice. Well, enjoy
the show. You're out, though.
So, okay, get to listen to the show. All right. That's what you wanted, I guess. So, I'm shopping around for, you know, looking to get a shop. I do this every once in a while. And I've talked to a few different, you know, tattoo shops and everything and kind of felt things out. I've been a couple places where, you know, like years ago, after I left the shop, it's been years now. It's been a little while. When I left the shop because I was just, you know, the politics and everything else. I wanted to spend more time with my kids and everything, so left the shop. The kids got older, and now it's time to. I started thinking about getting into a shop, and I started talking to different shops. I've been to some places. Like there's one shop that is perpetually hiring here in town. And I went and checked them out once, and it was just the nastiest little street shop. Just fucked up. And the guy wanted to put me in a room where the plaster's falling off the wall and shit. And he's not doing anything but giving me a ration of shit about my portfolio, okay? About how my shading needs work, about how, you know, whatever, which is, that's all fine and good. It's all good solid criticism is necessary in the art world. But this guy, you know, there's all this bullshit. So he's giving me all this shit about my work. And then he says, so when do you want to start? You want to start right now? And I'm thinking, you know,
question, man, about the shop. Did he have, first off, gloves? Secondly, did he have the machines required for sterilization of the equipment?
You know, I did see a sterilization room, okay, because I asked to see that. I didn't see his station. I didn't get into that. He showed me where he was going to put me. But, you get inspected here in town. So if he's owning the shop and everything else, he probably was at least meeting the minimal standards. But it was just, you know, just the guy's attitude. And the thing is, when I started learning how to tattoo, I heard about this kind of situation and I experienced it walking around with not a tattoo portfolio, but artwork that I was trying to sell, flash art, that every tattooed artist is really, really insecure, okay? Because the bottom line is, if you have a little bit of knowledge about how to do a tattoo and you have the equipment, you can do a tattoo, okay? It doesn't take much to do a tattoo. It takes a little bit to do a good tattoo or a great tattoo. That, you know, that's where you stand out as a tattoo artist. But anybody can do a tattoo. And frankly, your bread and butter tends to be the little bullshit tattoos. Somebody's name in cursive or a little heart or whatever, a little butterfly, whatever. That tends to be your bread and butter. Anybody can do that shit, okay? So it's hard when you're a tattoo artist. You want to make sure you have clientele, and you don't want people out there competing with you. So when you're talking to some guy that isn't at a shop but is tattooing, one of the things you got to be thinking about right away is his tattoos, when he offers a price, is half what I would charge for a tattoo, because he doesn't have to split his tattoo price with the shop. Okay?
Well, see, man, whenever I see someone, I'm not even trying to knock on you, man, but
right.
People who do it out of their own home, generally, okay, I'm not talking about you in this, okay, but generally, though, you find people who are not working in sanitary conditions. You have at least set up a room where all you do is tattoo. You are not
right.
doing it in your living room, in your kitchen. You are doing it in a fucking room. I've seen people who are doing it out of their houses, on their fucking couch, on their dining room table. See, that's where the term scratcher basically comes from. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a scratcher is anybody that hasn't had any kind of professional training. And anybody with any kind of professional training is not going to want to tattoo in an environment that they're not comfortable doing a tattoo in. So they're going to, you know, they're going to have, and they're going to do what I've done. They're going to have, you know, a vinyl-covered table. They're going to have plastic sheeting for that table. They're going to have, you know, sterile equipment. They're going to use only disposable equipment if they don't have an autoclave of their own. They're going to have, you know, a vinyl-covered massage table. They're going to have, you know, the armor, all the equipment. All the stuff I, you know, if I were, you know, when I walk into a studio, my thing will be, okay, you can take all of your furniture out because I'm bringing all my own stuff in.
What you're doing, man, isn't even legal in all the states. It is not even legal in New York, I believe, to actually have your own studio in your own home.
Right. It's the legality of it. It varies from state to state. The legality of doing tattoos in your home is not so much the issue. If you've got tattoo equipment and you want to give somebody a tattoo, you're more than welcome to do it. It's when you're charging for tattoos. Same with like cutting hair. It's when you're charging for that service that then there's a problem, because you're creating enough, you know, biohazard or health risk or whatever to the public that it's a concern. But anyways, that's here to there. But the thing is, when you talk to a shop owner, when you talk to an artist about, you know, getting a job, being a tattoo artist, a lot of them will try to run you down about your work, okay, or about what it is you got going on. And just to kind of, because they know that if a shop is desperate enough to have, because for a shop, all it's about is having somebody in that station to take customers so that half of whatever they get paid goes to the shop, okay? You want good quality work because you don't want your shop to be known for having shitty artists or whatever. But when the chips are down, when you got customers walking away from your shop to go find someplace else to get a tattoo, you want to make sure you have artists in there to cover your customers. So when you walk into a tattoo shop and you go, here's my portfolio and everything, and you know talk about it a little bit, occasionally you run into a tattoo artist or tattoo shop where the attitude is, you suck, you know, like this guy, you know, your shading's pretty weak and everything else, and blah blah blah, your color blending and everything else, like, you know, I don't like it and everything. And it was funny because my color blending and shading everywhere else I'd been, they raved about it, right? That wasn't my weakness, okay. But then it was, you know, right away. So can you start tonight? Okay, that's what really threw me off. Like, can I start tonight? You were just talking shit. I didn't even think I had a job here, and you're saying, can I start tonight? Like, yeah, let me think about this, man. Because, you know, like I said, I didn't like the neighborhood, I didn't like the setup, and didn't like the guy's attitude. So, but this is the kind of thing you run into. Now I've talked to other tattoo shops and other tattoo artists since then, that, you know, they dig my work. They dig my portfolio. They dig my professionalism. They know who I am. You know, they've heard about me from different people in different places and everything. And the issue has been not so much were they interested in having me? It was, you know, how much money would I be making and what kind of hours would I be working? And so far that's been the big inhibitor for me, is that, you know, I'm not necessarily in a position where I can do 12-hour days, 6 days a week. You know, and it's hard to, that's the advantage of being here. You know, if I'm going to do a 12-hour day, well, you know, I'm here all day to hang out with the kids or whatever between tattoos, and, I mean, that's my thing. So,
yeah.
Today though, are you want to say something?
No, I'm saying I agree with you, basically.
Okay. So, today, though, I'm looking around, all right? And it's funny. I answer a few ads on Craigslist. And I saw a couple ads on the Craigslist. I answered a couple. I saw three. One of the ads was the same guy that I just told you about, who's looking yet again for another tattoo artist. That's a red flag, okay? I mean, when you've got that kind of high, when an artist gets into a shop, if he's happy, if he likes where he's at and everything else, he holds on to that position, to that chair, tooth and nail, okay? It's why you have trouble getting a tattoo artist to come out and party or anything else. It's because, you know, he wants to meet the shop. That's where his life's at. So, you know, so this guy, yeah, once again, one of his artists, and I don't know, because he's got a whole new thing going on right now. He's got piercing, they've got, you know, they do hair, they do nails, they do it all. They changed the name of the place and everything else. And so somebody there had posted an ad saying they're looking for a tattoo artist. Just as a regular, the ad came across as just as a regular customer looking for an artist to do some work for them. So I got in contact with that person. He's like, no, this is, I'm at this shop. He gave me the name of the shop. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're with that guy. So, you know, never mind. This third guy I got in touch with, and I'm not gonna name names of the guy, and I'm not sure, you know, what his deal is exactly. And, you know, I want an honest critique of my work, to be perfectly frank. I've got all kinds of friends, all kinds of clients that rave about my tattoo work. I am not concerned at all about whether or not I will continue to get business for my tattoos, but I want to get better. And the only way I get better is if I have an honest critique. So this guy, he takes a look at my portfolio, and he's one critique about my work. Okay, he wrote me a few paragraphs. His one critique about my work is that my line work on some of my tattoos is a little shaky. Okay. So
that can happen.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. Could be a whole number of things. But that's cool. You know, I look at my portfolio, and, you know, not to, you know, toot my own horn, I see some of my older tattoos in my portfolio, definitely. Some of the new stuff, not so much. You know, it's always something you worry about. I'm always looking to improve. I'm always looking to clean up my line work and everything else. And that's, you know, that's my thing. So, okay. So it's one thing, and that was pretty much it. That he goes, he's like, you know, your quality of work really isn't what we're looking for our shop. Your line work is a little shaky in some of your tattoos. Cool. Okay. Then he goes on to rip me for selling supplies on my site. Okay. Yeah.
What kind of supplies are you selling? Is ripping on you about, though?
Tattoo supplies.
Okay. Supplies indicating what exactly? Equipment? What?
Inks, machines. If you wanted to learn how to be a tattoo artist or you wanted to get tattoo supplies, I have tattoo supplies available on my website.
Oh. And he's kind of worried about a Joe Schmo buying from you and possibly either A, doing damage to someone else, and or him losing business.
Well, there's the – and this is – okay, and there's an argument there that I've heard before that I actually made myself. That if you're selling supplies, because I've worked at a few shops where supplies are sold, if you're selling supplies to just anybody that walks in off the street, aren't you potentially risking somebody getting fucked up by somebody that doesn't know what they're doing? The answer to that question is yes, that's the case. However, if that kid or that guy wants to tattoo, if he's got it in his head that he can tattoo and he's going to do it, okay, if he doesn't buy supplies from your shop, he's going to buy supplies from somewhere.
Yeah.
If he can't, and the supplies he buys may be of a lower grade than the supplies you offer as a professional artist, okay?
Yeah, because you know what you're looking for, you know what to look for, you know what you're offering. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Or he does the prison tattoo thing and makes his own equipment.
Yeah, I've seen some of those fucking setups, man, and they're grotesque.
Right, yeah, so it's... So the thought process was, if they're going to buy supplies, better that they buy it from a shop where at least there's access to artists and people with experience who can explain what these supplies are, what the differences in grade are with inks, what's the difference in, you know, how these machines work, give them a little bit of information, okay? His other complaint was that I'm overcharging for my supplies, all right? Called it price gouging. Now, when I responded to him, I told him I'm doing that intentionally. There's a reason an ounce of ink on my website costs $10. Okay? Is that if you're serious about being a tattoo artist, if you're serious about being getting into this, and you haven't found an apprenticeship, okay, you're looking for all this, you know, you're getting your own ink or whatever, and this is what you want to do, well, then, you know what, you're going to have to prove it. You're going to have to pay a little bit more out of pocket. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to establish that you really, really want it. So I'm trying to keep the scratchers from, you know, buying supplies for me. The other thing is that if they are buying supplies for me and they're paying this huge amount of money to buy their supplies, well, then it costs, they have to charge more of their clients to get a tattoo. So their prices become less competitive. Okay.
You devious bastard. Oh, sorry.
Okay, so yeah, so that's, and, you know, guess how much supply, how many, you know, how much in supplies I sell? Hardly any. And, you know, and that's perfect. That's exactly the way it should be. Because you can find these same supplies, you can find cheaper in other places. Okay, I just happen to be, you know, I sell, you know, intense ink and everything else, so I sell the good stuff, basically. So there's that, okay? And I said, so I was like, you know, these people are going to get their, I said the same thing, these people are going to get their supplies wherever they want to get it. And I almost wanted to say to him, the other thing is, in regards to an apprenticeship, I fully agree that every tattoo artist, if they have the opportunity to get an apprenticeship, they should take it. They should, you know, they should seek it out. They should try to absorb and learn as much about tattooing as they can. And if they can get through an apprenticeship with a mentor, that is ideal. Okay, if they'll learn it faster, they'll make less mistakes. That's great, and I highly encourage that. However, as I was told by a tattoo artist who has received many awards and accolades from the tattoo industry for his work, if you can't find an apprenticeship and you really want to do this, the world is full of tattoo artists, award-winning tattoo artists who never had an apprenticeship. Tattoo artists who have gone on to open shops, several shops, chains of shops, who never had an apprenticeship. Okay? Because the tattoo world, like TC right now, going through an apprenticeship. Part of his reach into the tattoo world is that he knew people in the tattoo industry who were willing to take him on, who were willing to provide him some guidance. So he finds himself in an apprenticeship. Okay, I fell ass backwards into a tattoo apprenticeship. I happened to be walking into a shop buying supplies, and the guy that was in there liked my artwork and liked my attitude, and said, "How about you have an apprenticeship?" Tattoo artists are kind of paranoid. They're always afraid that, you know, this person's their next bit of competition. This person's their next challenger, basically. This person is the next person they'll have to overcome. So they're very careful about who it is they will or will not teach. And that's the way that the industry's been for years. So, you know, if you're going to teach somebody how to tattoo, more than likely you're going to teach your friends, your family, you know, cousin, you know, whatever, because you know that they're not going to fuck you over down the road. That, you know,
yeah,
they're going to be hopefully loyal to you enough to keep you from, you know, to not try to fuck with your business. And it used to be back in the day, you went and got an apprenticeship with somebody, you know, got some equipment, learned a little bit of shit about tattooing, and you tried to leave, or they might write you up with a contract. Hey, you're not guaranteed that you're going to have a job with this shop. And if you're not working for the shop, well, you can't work in this town, or you can't work here for 2 years. Or some ridiculous caveat. And you know, you hear about this in other industries now too, you know, computer, you know, software engineers and everything else say, hey, if you're working here and you're working in this industry, you've got to agree that you're not going to go work anywhere else for a year or whatever. But back in the old days, if you violated that kind of agreement with one of these because there's a reason that tattoo artists, the tattoo shops and everything else have kind of a thug reputation. These fuckers would go break your hands, okay? Oh, you wanted to violate your contract and everything else. You want to go out there, you think you can tattoo. I'm going to break your hands so you can't tattoo. I'm going to burn your shop down. That kind of thing. Used to happen. It used to happen in this industry. Now, the thinking, you see a lot more shops selling supplies. And again, the thinking is these guys have been getting supplies for years. It's better that they get their supplies from a reputable source. And it's better that they have access to some information so that it helps them not fuck somebody up. And, of course, when they do a bad tattoo, That's a tattoo for a tattoo artist to cover up later down the road. So it ends up making more money again. Okay? So, yeah, that's how that works. But anyways, he got on me about the supplies. The other thing he got on me about me is about my blog, where I'm offering advice on tattooing. And this is the thing, you know, all the other things. You know, his saying, you know, you shouldn't be selling supplies, that's just being a traditional tattoo artist. I understand that. His thing about the line work being shaky, that's just being protective of your particular, you know, business clientele, trying to discourage me. Because that's nothing's more discouraging than hearing that your work isn't good enough or isn't good. You do one of two things. You either try harder and get better, which is good, or you give up. And a lot of tattoo artists, frankly, give up, which is why you do that. But the thing that caught my attention, the thing that really kind of bothered me about this exchange with this guy, is that in my blog, in one of my blogs, I talk about what it takes to be clean and while doing a tattoo. And I mentioned that with latex gloves, while you're doing a tattoo, you should change your gloves frequently, all right? The latex breaks down. I think I remember hearing somebody say, or I remember reading someplace that in about 12 to 15 minutes, a latex glove being worn while doing a tattoo no longer provides adequate protection. All right? And I would challenge people to, you know, to take a pair of latex gloves and put them on your hands and then, you know, stick them into warm water, like a warm, you know, not just, you know, warm water, not boiling water, but warm water, like, you know, a body's going to be warm, the kind of heat that the body's going to give off of. And just rub your hands every once in a while, not scrub or anything else, but rub your hands, rub your gloves. See how long it takes for your hands to feel wet.
Yeah.
Okay? Pretty damn quick. So that means that glove's not doing what it's supposed to do. You can wear that glove all day, but eventually that glove's not going to protect you or your client from, you know, from what's going on. You've got to change your gloves often. And
Now, why did this piss the guy off, though?
What's that?
Why did this piss the guy off?
Well, he's of the opinion that you only change your gloves when you touch an unsterilized or unsanitized item. Otherwise,
that was the old way of thinking about it.
Right, you wear your gloves. It's the cost-effective way of thinking about it. You know, that way you're not burning your gloves. Like, I've got a lot of clients that sit there, they're amazed at the amount of gloves I'll go through. Okay? And it's a matter of habit. Every time, you know, that I go to change the paper towel or whatever, I'm changing gloves. You know, every time, you know, whatever I'm doing, you know, the gloves get changed. I mean, you think about this. You got this glove, it's soaking in, you know, it's got the green soap that you're dealing with. It's got the, if you use, like, fast filtration like I use, it's a petroleum-based topical antibiotic that I use to protect the stencil area and the tattoo. It's got, you know, the water, the ink. It's got the blood plasma from the guy. It's got the sweat from my hands. It's got all that working against it. So you want to change your gloves frequently. When he said you only have to change your gloves if you touch an unsanitized or unsterilized item, that was in my mind a red flag. You know, here he is. He's giving me shit about, you know, my line of work is shaky. He's giving me shit about selling tattoo supplies. And something that I consider just basic information, basic cleanliness, that you want to change your gloves frequently. 10 minutes is, yeah, it's frequent, it's extreme. But that, I don't have a timer sitting on my table that goes off every 10 minutes. It's just a general rule. You know, every 10 minutes or so, change your gloves. Because every 12 or 15 minutes or so, they're not doing their job. But the fact that the guy had to say, you know, the guy had that opinion, said to me, okay, maybe this is not a guy I want to work for. Maybe this is not a guy that I want to, you know, take too serious, put too much stock in their opinion. I got some weird message. I'm sorry, I got a little distracted. I got some weird message on the in the studio. The Priority Support Call Center is currently experiencing technical issues. That has nothing to do with us, as long as people are able to get the show. So that was my thing today. And it's always, you know, it's kind of a downer, man, to deal with somebody that has that thing going on. And here I am. We're more than half hour in show, and I've been talking about tattoo shit.
Was this guy, though, a reputable guy, though, in your area?
Well, I've heard the guy's name before. I don't know how reputable he is. Yeah, I haven't gone and checked out his work or whatever. And, I, you know, when I sent an email back, I was nice, you know, but I did say, you know, that I think with gloves changing, it should be, you know, this, and here's my reasons. I did say that, you know, if you're going to, if people are going to buy supplies, well, then it makes sense that they buy supplies from somebody that knows what they're doing, who can provide them advice. That, and I told them, you know, the intention, it's priced high intentionally to kind of, you know, weed out the scratchers, that kind of thing. So he's and the different. I guess the thing is here is that he's in a shop right now and I'm not. So I'm discussing this from a position of weakness, basically, because you know he doesn't know how much experience I have. He doesn't know how many shops I've been in. He doesn't know anything about me. As far as he knows, I'm just just some guy again tattooing out in the world, and whatever the other competition is what I am. So yeah. So that was my day today, the big thing that I had to deal with a little bit. The thing has got me, it's in my craw, basically, bugging me. Let's see. So a little bit of insight on the tattoo industry, I guess. I guess the big news today that caught my attention is that the California ban on gay marriage has been found unconstitutional by the Federal Appeals Court.
Them banning it, it's unconstitutional, so it's going to be made legal again.
Well, that's it's saying basically that I think that if a Federal Appeals Court says that this ban is unconstitutional, that means the argument has to go to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has the option of either hearing the argument or not hearing the argument, okay? So it's still got a few hoops to jump through.
Yeah, it's really no hot-button issue inside of me. I mean, Rick Perry is, he basically made this whole long spiel after it about in the last caucus event that he was pretty much opposed to it and it was against God and this and that. And also he had tied it into the Catholics being up in arms about work providing birth control if the person wanted it.
Right. Yeah, it's the hardline Republicans, the hardline conservatives have always been opposed to marriage between homosexual couples. I say it this way because I saw a thing on Facebook today that really got me thinking, I need to change my language because the way we discuss it has an impact on the way that people view these things. I've been saying gay marriage, so right along with everybody else, gay marriage, the issue is gay marriage, blah, 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 blah. And the thing I saw on Facebook is that, he's happy that the ban against gay marriage has been overturned by the Court of Appeals, or rather just the ban on marriage. Because he says when he parks a car, it's not gay parking. He's just parking a car. Just a gay man parking a car. So if he's a gay man getting married, there should be no special distinction. It shouldn't be gay marriage. It should just be marriage. Marriage between two dudes. And so the argument has been kind of taken away in that way. But, that there's this distinction that has been made I think intentionally, obviously, but this distinction has been made in our society between marriage and gay marriage. When in fact there should be no distinction, it's marriage between two people, and the issue is the conservatives say those two people should be of opposite genders, and everybody, the progressives, if you will, they're holding the argument that I guess I shouldn't even say that the people who are opposed to the idea of two people getting married who are of opposite genders, that's their thing. They want or are not of opposite genders. They're opposed to that idea. Because you got people on the conservative side that are for or support marriage regardless of the sex between the people, and you got people on the progressive side who oppose sex when it's not between two people who are of opposite genders. Now I'm getting all confused about my gender roles and everything else. So in that statement, yeah. So yeah, that was the big thing that I saw today. And yeah, there's going to be. I mean, it's going to be a hot button issue, and first of all, will the Supreme Court hear it? And that's the big thing that I think that the conservatives, the people who are opposed to it, that they're afraid of, that it goes to the Supreme Court, and that the Supreme Court goes, there's no constitutional support for that ban. You know, without amending the Constitution, this law, any ban on marriage between two people of the same sex, is wrong.
Opposing okay, my viewing is no, they will not hear it right now. Yes, member man, it's election year. They are not going to want to, rock the boat, at least not yet. Will they possibly hear it? Yes. You know, I mean, pigs have, you know, I don't know. They might hear it. I don't think it'll be before the election. I really don't. After the election, after, you know, things have kind of calmed down, the media a little bit, which is a three-ring circus as is, then yes, maybe they'll hear it, but I don't think until then.
I don't know. I think this is a way to sink the Republican Party. I think if you make this the issue now, and maybe you're right, it doesn't go to the Supreme Court. Maybe the threat looms that the Supreme Court will hear the argument, okay? Because I don't know how long they have to decide on whether or not they'll hear an argument or what have you, okay? But what you're going to see, you've got these four contenders, and it's shockingly Santorum has pulled ahead in all these different polls, basically. The Rick Santorum is now ahead of Romney, is now ahead of Gingrich, which it was Romney and Gingrich dueling back and forth for a while with about 25% of the vote one way or the other. And now Santorum is sitting up in several states with nearly half of the vote. But let's say these knuckleheads in the GOP race speak out one way or the other. I mean, because this is easy. You know, they're going to be asked, okay, you know, the ban on marriage between homosexual couples has been lifted or is found unconstitutional by the federal appellate court in California. Where do you stand, presidential candidate or, potential Republican presidential candidate, Romney, Gingrich, where do you stand? For or against? Okay. And you can try to weasel out of it as much as you want, but eventually you're going to have to express your opinion, for or against. If you say you are for the ban, then you burn yourself with every – I'll say it. Frankly, open-minded and right-thinking individual of this country.
If you say you're for the ban. I think there is still enough of a homophobic rub to the nation to where I don't think that candidate said that they were for the ban. I don't think it makes much of a difference. You're still going to have these hard-line, basically Neanderthal people who will vote for them. And I hate to say it, man, but that is most of the people in the U.S. You know, most of them are extremely close-minded about a lot of issues that, personally, I'm quite open about. But that goes without saying, of course. But I do not – I think it could really be in their favor, them saying they're against it. I mean, hell, dude, same thing saying that you're anti-abortion. That's a hot-button issue that will get you voters. It's the same goddamn thing.
I just have – you're right. You're going to draw voters from one pool and lose voters from another pool. And like you're saying, you say you're for this ban and you're opposed to this appellate court's decision, then you're going to get those close-minded rednecks. They're going to come out and go, I'm voting for that guy because he agrees with me, basically. But I think there's this large swath of middle ground in our country. And you're right. The tendency might be to be more, the homosexual thing is icky, rather than, fuck it, whatever they do is their opinion. It's up to them, whatever it is. That might be the way to go. But I think you've got a strong portion of the population that while they might be in disagreement with the idea of marriage between homosexuals, they don't want to necessarily also come out and be identified as a bigot, basically, or whatever it is, right? They don't want to be identified that way.
Kind of the same reason why everyone voted for Obama in the first place.
I think there was probably a strong segment of the population that voted for Obama because, to not vote for Obama would prove what a racist you were. Which is totally untrue, but there was an element in his campaign that played on that totally. But
I know people who voted for him for that reason because he appeared to be black. I know people
right,
did that.
Right. And with that too, there are those people who voted for him because he's black because it'd be cool to finally have a black president. And then there are people that voted for him because he's black, because, well, they didn't want to appear to be racist and not vote for the black guy. So, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, with this, I think it is a divisive issue. I think, though, that, I don't know, when I put my finger in the air and try to figure out public opinion, it seems to me that the GOP candidate that comes out and takes a hard line against this thing, okay, he might win the conservative vote, but he won't win the election. Okay, that this is one of those things that burns him. You know, not having I think the only right opinion to have, if you're going to be a politician, frankly, on this issue, is that it should be the will of the people. You know, let the people decide. And then, you know, that's what you say. I'm going to stand with the will of the people. So if the will of the people say this is what should be, you know, or I'm, you know, fuck it. Or I'm going to stand with, if I'm president of the United States, my job is to enforce the Constitution. So if the people in the Supreme Court who decide or interpret the Constitution say the Constitution states this, well, then it's my job as president of the United States, regardless of how I feel, to enforce the Constitution based on that interpretation. Okay.
Okay, question for Okay. With a lot of these hot-button issues, especially we have, you know, the gay marriage right now, we have a lot of stuff coming out recently with the Catholic Church and the work thing with, you know, the birth control being provided, which they feel
right.
is against, you know, Catholic law. A lot of these different smaller issues coming about, especially with the religion. Who do you think will actually win the election with these issues coming out? Who do you think
will say the
right things and get elected?
The Obama administration, the shit they pulled against the Catholic Church, and that's what it is. It's an effort to force religious organizations like the Catholic Church to toe what they think should be the social agenda. That's what's going on there. I think that's going to hurt the Obama campaign in a few ways. But I also think that, frankly, down the road, I think Obama's going to be president for another 4 years.
Wow.
I think despite all the, you know, all the little bullshit, all the backroom dealings, all the little – I mean, you know, this is fucked up, you know, since the 1960s, four governors in Illinois have done jail time, okay, after they've been governor, okay? So this is Obama's state. You know, this is, you know, the state that helped him. That political machine got him elected and everything else. When Obama lost his Senate seat and everything else, the governor in Illinois, the most recent one, wanted to go to jail. Got, you know, he lost his seat because he tried selling Obama's seat to basically the highest bidder, okay?
Yeah.
And went to jail over that shit. So that's – I mean, these are the kinds of people that we're dealing with. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they're good people or anything like that. I think that it's going to go to Obama. I think that the what we're seeing with this GOP election, the conservative party, the people that are opposed to the progressive agenda, are too wishy-washy about what it is they want. They're all over the map, you know, which is why you've got, you know, four candidates who on any given day are winning the polls. I mean, it's, you know. It was Gingrich 1 week. It was Romney the next week. It's Santorum the next week. You know, Ron Paul, I'm sure is going to have his week, or is going to get his week again, or whatever. They can't make up their mind. And it's because I think part of it is because there's kind of an evolution going on in the conservative party. That there's a shift from social conservatism, or kind of stepping away from social conservatism, and focusing more on fiscal conservatism, which I, you
now,
know, in my opinion, can't hurt.
I have to say, man, first off, I know that the president really doesn't do jack shit. I get that, of course. I know,
right.
But of course, it's not so much the president doing anything, but the people that he holds cabinet with, the people that he, you know, holds in the round table, as it were, the people that he has brought into his inner circle who, or movers and shakers, as it were, people who are within the finance industry, within multiple different industries, people that he has basically brought in with him, you know, into his whatever, okay? Those are the people you have to worry about. And as it stands, I'm definitely I'm kind of somewhat anxious to see what's going to happen because, I mean, the last 4 years have not been, you know, exactly roses and daffodils, man, and I think it's going to get a lot worse if we have them again in their 4 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I see. I agree there. The thing that makes me afraid of another 4 years of Obama, the Obama administration, is that he has nothing to lose for the next 4 years if he's reelected. He can't be elected president again. So, you know, why not push through whatever little bullshit he pushes through? And just because he can't, like I said, his job is to enforce the Constitution. Well, you know, he can selectively enforce the Constitution.
Yeah.
He can do, you know, he can choose to crack down on one, you know, one type of whatever law enforcement and back way off of another type of law enforcement. His, you know, his health care plan, and let's say it's not just the presidential election to be concerned about. It's the legislators. So, yeah, let's say he gets another fucking 4 years, and, you know, that gives his winning the election gives his, you know, the people in the Senate and the people in the House of Representatives enough momentum on his side that they start to get a little bit of that power back. You know, the House, I mean, right now they don't have the House of Representatives, but they have the Senate. They get the House of Representatives back again. And they go, okay, we got this president. We've got, you know, we've got 3 years or whatever to ram some shit through, get some shit done. They can reshape, in many ways, the social climate.
Obama trying to repush Obamacare is a scary idea. The way that thing was worded, what it would have done if it was passed, would have fucked so many things up. It would have been unfathomable. That was probably one of the worst health care bills I have ever seen.
Well, and it's pretty bad when the guy who's the cheerleader for the damn thing says that he's going to have a line-by-line veto power in the thing. In other words, he doesn't even agree with everything that's in there. Or he recognizes that if something comes out and it's found to be very unpopular, that'll have, for his political expedience, he'll have to get rid of it. So it's going to be the health care bill thing. And that's the thing. When you're talking about if it gets passed or whatever, it's been passed. Big portions of it have been passed. Pieces of it are going into effect, you know, right now. Vanessa could be on the health insurance until she's 26.
Hmm.
Used to be until she's 18. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got all kinds of, I mean, just like you're seeing in the internet with the bullshit with SOPA and DEPA and everything else, you got whole swaths of the medical, you know, industry, you know, the insurance, medical insurance, the pharmaceuticals and everything else, changing their policies, changing who they'll cover, who they'll deal with and everything else to get in compliance with the changes that are already going to go into effect in 2014. So it's on its way. It's already here and it's rolling forward. And you know, like I said, you know, Obama, shit. Obama wins the election. He's president for another 4 years. And who knows? Hillary Clinton in fucking 2016.
You know, man, I... in some ways, I think that the country's ready for, you know, a quasi-black president. Remember, he's not black. He's not fully black. Fuck you. He's not fully black. But I don't think we're going to be ready... by 2016 for a female president. I don't.
Yeah, you know, when I look at this, I think the idea of looking at gender or looking at race, I think that it's pointless. Because like you said, you understand the president, he's just a guy with a hand up his ass. He's just a puppet for whoever's pulling his strings. You know, there's a period of time where the guy who won the election is being groomed while the guy who, you know, who's on his way out is being, you know, given his exit interviews and shit. So that the new guy knows who's running the show. The new guy knows who he needs to talk to, who, you know, who he can go to, what he's got to do and everything else. He knows who the players are, basically. These players don't get elected. But, you know, these are the guys that are actually running fucking things, or at least can put the kibosh on anything that the president decides he wants to run that they don't like. So, you know, it's the idea of, oh, a chick president or a black president or whatever, I don't think it matters anymore. I think it's just a matter of you know, who's the best yes man. In fact, I think I've said on another show, I don't know if it was this show or the Sunday show, that I frankly don't see a distinction between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party anymore.
No, there isn't one.
That is, they're basically a political weather vane, the two-party system. Either the wind is blowing east or the wind is blowing west, one way or the other. That's the direction of the political climate. And, I mean, the biggest complaint about the Obama administration from the progressive left is that not enough's getting done. And it's because, well, you know, it's not meant to get done. You know, the agenda, though, whatever the agenda is of, in the Congress, whatever their agenda is, whatever those people's agenda is, that agenda continues to move forward. And frankly, I see that agenda as greater and greater separation between the very, very wealthy, the power elite, and the very, very poor. And the
line of what's considered poor is going to get so much more massive.
Yeah. And the fucked up thing, I think, is that you're starting to see the power elites, the very ultra wealthy, start to eat their own. That they're making a distinction in that particular stratus between the wealthy who came up and came into their wealth via industry. That they're the ones who, you know, provide the jobs. They're the ones who do the manufacturing. So there's that kind of money. And then there's the American aristocracy, the money that has been there and has always been there, the money that's, you know, being invested globally, that isn't reliant on a particular industry. Rather, it's driven by all industries. And, you know, if you have the right opinion, you go to the right parties, and you're not there, you know, with your sleeves rolled up in a factory pretending to be one of the workers, then, you know, you're better money, basically. So you've got these industrialists who play ball, you know. You want my business to be in Indochina because you want the Indochinese to feel better and you want to feel good about yourself too. Fuck it. Well, move the factory over there. And then you got these guys who don't want to play ball, who are like, you know what, there's good oil to go for in the Gulf. Let's go for it. So, all right. So we only got about 30 seconds left. Next week we're going to be talking about globalism, nationalism, and national
actually,
pride.
Next week will be the basically ripping on the environmentalists.
You want to do next week the environmentalists? Okay. So next week we're going to talk about the environmentalists. Be here at 10 p.m. Eastern time, and I'm going to roll the outro, man. Good talking to you.
Later.
This has been the Ooze.